Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Christiana Schroeder, an accountability coach, professor, speaker, and host of the Happy Healthy Hustle podcast, ranked among the top 1.5% of podcasts globally. Christiana helps business owners and many from family businesses optimize their health and mindset for peak productivity and confidence. She brings a unique perspective as both a professor of food marketing innovation and entrepreneurship at Cal Poly and as a global coach who works closely with family-owned companies. She's the founder of Hello Happy Nest, a mastermind and coaching platform, and the author of three books. And most recently, Christiana was featured on a TEDx stage where she shared her passion for wellness and leadership. Dr. Schroeder, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you so much for this beautiful introduction. I'm so happy to be here and welcome to the audience.
Thank you. So let's start with your story. Growing up in Germany near Frankfurt first inspired your passion for both business and wellness. Talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, I think Germans definitely have it down with regard to the structure. If you think about German and the European lifestyle in general, we definitely work to have a beautiful life. And that's sometimes reversed in the United States, right? Here, we live to work. And I think that's definitely something I still have very much in my coaching practice to these days. I try to create good boundaries between my work and my leisure. And I think that's so important also for family-run businesses to make sure you have strong boundaries where you create some wellness for yourself and also, of course, while still keep the business running.
A challenging proposition where in family business, the lines are so often blurred in so many ways. But talking about some of what you've done so far, you've written three books, you teach at Cal Poly, and you coach entrepreneurs. What connects all the dots for you? What connects all these different roles for you, Dr. Schroeder?
I think you need to look at that. And I love that you mentioned the word dots. When I look at all these elements, I nearly think of them as stars. And what's the pattern with them? It's a constellation. And we all have constellations in the sky. We just need to look and we need to figure out how the stars line up. So whenever you start something, whether that's writing a book, starting a podcast, becoming a keynote speaker, you need to figure out how does it feed other elements in my business? How can I use this as a springboard for something else? Because it needs to be a story. As I say, it needs to be a constellation where everything is connected and fluidly from one to the next. So I'm always very intentional on my podcast, for instance, when I record an episode, to also share it on YouTube, also share it on my blog, on my website, create a Pinterest post, make sure I share it on LinkedIn. So I really honor the guest and the episode, but at the same time, I already recorded the material. So I may as well just really slice and dice it and figure out how I can use it in a lot of different ways. I think that's just smart entrepreneurship.
Awesome. Very well said. I want to touch on one of your favorite sayings, and I hope I get this right. We don't care about how much you know until we know how much you care. Talk about that for a moment and how that philosophy guides your work, guides your practice, especially I think we're in an era where people, sometimes their first instinct is to not trust, then to be trusting. And this idea of showing how much you care probably is of even greater importance by today's standards. So talk about that expression for a moment.
You got it exactly right. The expression is exactly right. I think that when you meet people, you need to keep that in mind. They are people and they care. They mostly probably care about themselves, but you need to show them that you are just a person yourself and that the experiences, the struggles, the wins that you had in your life might be something that will actually help them as well. So when you want to run a successful business, you always need to think you're serving others. How can I serve others? How can I share something that I experienced that will help others? Whether that's a struggle, excuse me, a struggle that maybe I overcame. How can somebody else learn from this struggle and maybe even get through the struggle a little quicker than I did? Or maybe it's a quick win and I want to share that win. And I always say shared joy is double the joy too, right? When you get that virtual high five from somebody.
For
And that
sure.
is the same situation where maybe you have a win because you appeared on a podcast, you appeared on a stage, maybe you published that book. And I think there are so many people out there that look for those good news that they would really love to hear from you about it. Never think, oh, I'm just not good enough to share this, because once you get started and talking about it very passionately, you're not really out there to sell something. You're just out there to infect the world with what you created. And sometimes we get so sidetracked and thinking, oh, that's salesy, isn't it? Not at all. If you're honestly excited about something, people can tell. Because you're passionate about it. And I think that good leaders are sharing that. They share the good, the bad, and the ugly.
For sure. So I have to ask a question. As with our own podcast here, we're soon approaching our 50th episode. You host the podcast Happy Healthy Hustle, which is ranked the top 1.5% globally, which is staggering to me. That's amazing. But talk about that if you would. What inspired you to start it, and what is the intended impact of that particular program?
It's actually ranked globally 1% right now.
Okay, even better.
And I have to tell you, it was a complete coincidence that I even found out. When I started the podcast, I didn't even know there was such a thing until a friend reached out. I think it was on Instagram. She said, "Is that you?" And she sent me a screenshot of my podcast. And at that point, I think it was ranked 2.5%. It was after 3 months running the podcast. I was like, so down in business, publishing episodes, I didn't even look right and left. And I was like, what is my podcast? And then it quickly took off from there. I think really it comes back to, again, doing something that you care about. I didn't think about the ranking part. And I just thought there are people out there that want to hear my message. The 15-minute episodes on their way to work or on the school pickup, or maybe just walking in between Zoom meetings. You're just taking a quick loop around the block and you're popping in your headset and you're listening to one of my episodes. That is what I had in mind. Everything else is just fluff, right? It's just the cherry on the top. Amazing. And I love it. At the same time, there are people that reach out to me and they send me an email and they say, oh, I just listened to this episode and I would love to hear more about that. I tune into this. So, again, good entrepreneurship, good business means, yes, of course, I'm speaking, I'm sharing, but I'm also listening and I'm caring. And I think that is the most important formula. Always listen first and then speak.
Absolutely. We talk about that a lot here. In fact, just had that conversation about the importance of active listening, not just taking a defensive position, but understanding that we might not always understand the perspective of the person we're talking with, and they have one. And by active listening, we understand what that is so that we can be relatable. And that's so important, especially for passionate creatives that are here and who get very passionate about the work that they do. As a coach, you've remarked that one of the most common challenges in family businesses is communication breakdown, especially during a succession or a leadership transition. Can you talk a bit more about that and about how, in your practice, you help clients work through those communication breakdowns, what they look like, and how you over help them overcome that.
So important. And I have two words for you: legacy and leadership. And they are two separate buckets, right? The leadership, frequently very emotionally charged. And then there is the legacy. And it's sometimes tied in with expectations because you're part of the family. You have the legacy to take over the leadership. But I want to make sure there are actually two separate buckets right there. So, as a professor, I already see this as young as in the classroom with my college students, where there's the expectation as a legacy to take over the leadership. And there's frequently a resentment, and it starts with, I didn't really want to study X, Y, and Z, but my parents paid for it. And so they want me to take over the business and do this. And then I sometimes just ask very bluntly, do you actually enjoy this? Nope. Do you really want to have a leader like that?
Good point.
And then I see it on the other spectrum too, with business owners, where there is a little bit of a resentment. Oh, why am I here? This really my calling. And if you think about what really the drive and the passion is, it's sometimes challenging to really get that from somebody that essentially feels they are put into a role. I think about it like, you know, comparing it to putting shoes on, right? So I have children. My younger daughter doesn't hand me downs. She wants to get her own clothing. She has her own style. Hand me downs were good when they were little toddlers because they didn't speak up. But now that they speak up, it's, I don't want to wear that stuff. So I think it's on a bigger scale. Of course, it's a struggle to combine those two, and especially the emotions that tie in with leadership, to really think that legacy immediately leads to leadership. And frequently, what happens and what helps is, and I see this now actually a lot, even for my college students going to the small business owners, that there is a little bit of a year that new graduate or new business owner steps away from the family. It's nearly like a year of experience that they get. And I've seen that works actually quite well, to where they intentionally do something else and then they actually come back. And I think that sometimes that distance creates more closeness. It sounds really interesting, but the more you try and talk people into doing something, the more you're actually pushing them away. But if you give them that distance, they will actually come to you. I've seen that over and over again. It's quite intriguing, but again, encourage you to try it.
A great point, and one that's been, I can now say, coming up on 50 episodes, I've heard many sides to that argument. A lot of people will say there's tremendous value in experiencing something other than the family business and then circling back on a number of levels, not just for the relationship dynamics, but also for the experiences learned and garnered by working for someone other than a family member. I've heard some that say, if you know that's what you want and you're passionate about that and you know that at a young age, why wait? Why not start that journey as soon as you can? And I think those are a certain breed that sort of found that passion in the family business, as did the previous generation. They knew it, they wanted it, and they were ready to go for it. And then there's others, like a guest I just interviewed, who left the family business and did not return, even though they really wanted him back, and spoke a lot about how hard of a decision that was. To know that your family was looking for that return and that return wasn't coming. But again, I think it's very much that really resonates with what you said, that idea of legacy and leadership are not the same thing. And even though that was that person's legacy, their leadership instincts or persona took them to lead a different company. And that's their journey. So I think an important lesson you just shared there for sure. Another thing you spoke about is that sometimes in the family business organization, family dynamics will often shape business decisions, even when they may be unspoken. What are some ways that you help families bring some of those unspoken truths or unspoken elements out into the open in a constructive way?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. And I like that you actually even say constructive, because everybody is quite different and it really depends on what type of communicator are you? How are you even sharing news with your family about the business? And I think how we started this episode will actually help you in figure out the solution to this question. So it really helps to have boundaries, because I think that sometimes a lot of the challenges, or let's say friction, that's a beautiful word, friction, like how it's zoomed out there, comes from bringing the business decisions to every aspect of your life. And I think it nearly feels like a sponge that's becoming oversaturated. And at some point comes like this, I just don't want to hear it anymore. And I see this a lot. And then I ask questions, what else do you do? What else do you talk about? And that's pretty much it. It's no wonder if it's like consuming your day 24/7, that's a lot.
Yes.
So you need to think whether that's a physical space when you're working from home, having an office door that you actually close, and when you close it, that's where the business stays. Maybe even creating time boundaries at dinner. We're not talking about this.
Yes.
Maybe even creating event boundaries, holidays, we don't talk about this, or at dinner time. I have to do this too with my husband, right? We go out for dinner and I say, all right, we're in a restaurant right now. Let's just not talk about this. And I think it helps because you want to be, think a little bit of that German structure that I talked about. You want to be mentally ready and prepared to have conversations at the right time, in the right space, but also when the other person is ready for it. And by not allowing the other person to give them a little bit of a breathing room, you're always assuming they're ready for it. But maybe they are not. And I think that sometimes creates resentment. So if you have, we have a family calendar and I schedule my business time in there. And then I schedule my leisure time in there, and I schedule family time in there and children time. And I think if you do that, it needs to be an unspoken rule. That is really where you put your mind. I call it the presence principle. Presence principle means you need to be present then at that moment, and everything else is just not present at that moment. And that might include business talk.
I have to smile because I'm sitting here thinking, where were you, Dr. Schroeder, when I was in my 20s and I needed you?
I'm so sorry.
Because being in a family of crazy, passionate Italians, there was definitely a blurring of the lines. And ultimately, and I've heard this from other guests, where some are very fluid, where it's not uncommon to bring up business at the dinner table or in a family gathering. Some will police it a little bit and say, all right, let's take that back to the office. It's getting too deep. We're monopolizing the conversation. And I know that I ultimately had to become the watchdog of that because my father, when we were overlapping, would frequently bring up business in a family gathering and vice versa. And I was the one to say, let's talk about that on Monday. Great, great thought. Let's pick it up on Monday. He didn't like that because he was used to just talking about what was on his mind at that moment. But I also knew from experience that if we go down this path, the chances of us locking horns are high because, to your point, it was a bit of a sneak attack. We're sitting here having dinner, the family's here, and he wants to talk about something that happened on the office on Friday. I'm like, no. But I think it is healthy to have those boundaries and makes you better in both camps, a better family member and a better family business professional, too. A good idea to set those up. Speaking of that, many families, good, you have a point, good.
I have a funny story from a small business owner, and she has a very successful real estate company. And what her son does is when they watch a movie, he gives her like a notepad and a pen because he just wants to watch the movie. And he's, if you have anything, just write it down on this notepad right there. And I'm like,
Yeah.
just love it because I didn't even know that I was doing that because I see things in the movie and I'm like, oh my gosh, that is such a good idea. And her son just wants to watch the movie. It's just, don't interrupt me right now. Here, just write it down. And I thought that was so adorable. It made me laugh. And I thought, how brilliant and how simple.
So this does a great story and a great idea too. And I think it dovetails nicely into the next question that I had for you. And that's the idea of something that I think a lot of business leaders, especially those in family businesses, struggle with. And that's separating emotion from reaction. You know, that has everything to do with the idea of emotional intelligence. And if I went back to my dad's past, but if I started a conversation with him about emotional intelligence, he'd probably look at me like I had seven heads. Like, stop it, go back to work, shut up. But how do you coach leaders to develop emotional intelligence as a true business skill? How do you help them come to terms with that?
Beautiful. And I want to bring it back to that word of legacy. You always need to think you're leaving legacy, not just with your business, but also with your leadership. And you need to think about the fact, what do I want to be remembered by? What do people talk about when I'm not in the room? What is something, as sad as it sounds, that somebody would put on a gravestone about me? If you're this emotional person, that might actually ring a bell right now to where, oh, like, I guess sometimes I am grumpy and then I explode. Blah, blah, blah. You need to figure out how to get those emotions under control because those three questions, what do people talk about when I'm not in the room? What do I want to be remembered by? And what would people put on a gravestone? Do not tie in with like furious leadership or being impatient. And at the end of the day, your legacy is really something you want that people smile and talk about. You remember all these positive moments where you're feeling, all right, I need to take a step back and I need to, whatever's boiling in me right now, I just need to bring this down a notch. And that will help because you can't control what's happening in your business at all time, but you can control how you react to it. And that is very much what makes a good leader. You can honestly say, all right, today I'm feeling deflated because this is going on. But at the same time, people are listening to you, and it's great that you're sharing your vulnerability and that. But you also need to think about they have families too, and they are going back with the emotions that you shared right now. So you don't want to saturate your frustration on them because that's just not right. So I think at the end of the day, being a good leader also means that you figure out how you deal with the emotions and how, when you meet your team, you're becoming the best person possible to share that you really created that boundary.
That's great. That's great. It reminds me of a mentor of mine who would coach me on, because I, being a crazy passionate Italian, I can get rather animated. And he said, all right, if that's something today, something coming up, when you get to tomorrow and you look back, how do you want to look back on today? Is how did you show up? And were you true to your leadership? Were you true to your values? How did you show up? Because that's what you're going to remember. And do you want to remember that you blew up and got animated and said a lot of crazy things, or that you maintain your calm and professionalism and dealt with the situation in a very adult, focused, and professional, mature manner? It's having that sort of perspective of how do I want to remember that moment? And to your point, how do you want it to say it on that tombstone?
You
What
know,
should that say?
we actually even do that as an exercise. In my books, I have it, the tombstone exercise. And at the beginning, you're going to love about this, but people at the beginning are very humble. They write down loving father or something. That's it? That's what you want to be remembered by? Loving father? There's a thousand of these tombstones out there. I want a little bit more of the juicy details here. Then let me think about this. It's a good start, but that's not at all unique. And you are unique. And I want to figure out a little bit more. It's a big tombstone. Think about that, right? You gotta fill the space. So figure
That's
out a
true.
little bit more about some unique values. And I even give them a value list. And then they look at it and they're like, oh my gosh, that's a lot of values. And I associate with so many of them. Now, we're just picking three. And you need to think about those three, put them on the post-it notes, maybe next to your laptop, to the mirror, maybe in the bathroom, maybe to the door, to the boardroom, who knows what. Are you in line with your values? And if you remind yourself every day, after a while, you don't have to look at that post-it note anymore. But that will also help. And I love that you brought this up in really thinking, is that something I'm going to be proud about tomorrow, in a month, in 5 years, on the tombstone? Does it all line up right here? Because if it doesn't, it maybe shouldn't even be part of how I react right now.
Absolutely. So let's touch on another area where I know you have a lot of passion and expertise, and that would be in the space of wellness and self-care. So many leaders, and as a quick aside, a couple of years ago, I was inching close to 300 pounds and got myself down to 200. Now I've given back a little ground, but nonetheless, I said, oh my gosh, look at what I've become. And often used, I don't have time to take care of myself. I've got to run a business. The old excuse. And there's a lot of pressure. And certainly in a family business, there's for the next generation, there's always pressure to do well and to maybe even best the previous generation, or at least not let the ship sink. Talk about that for family business leaders who are under that constant pressure, who are highly driven, hard workers, workaholics maybe. How do you introduce wellness and self-care, and how do you help them see that as a priority?
In two ways. One is asking, so what did you do when you had that win last week? What did you do to celebrate? And frequently people are like, I didn't celebrate at all. And then they say, oh yeah, maybe I took the family out for dinner or something. And then I'm like, no, you, like you yourself, did you do anything to take care of yourself? Because you had a win, that means you worked hard, things fell into place. And I would like to know something that you did to take care of yourself, which is wellness at its core. And frequently people forget about celebrating the small wins. They just move on and they look at the road ahead, but they don't take a moment to pause and reflect on what worked well. Hold on, what worked well? Why did that actually happen? Which is so important. And maybe even thinking about what in my physical and emotional space really helped me and align my business so it became so successful. Because it's really intertwined, it's holistic, right? Your business will thrive when you take care of yourself. The more you take care of yourself, the more your business will thrive. And we brought that up earlier. You're also, of course, leaving a legacy of health and wellness, and you're becoming a good leader because you're whatever emotions you got going on, you're leaving them in the gym or at home or whatever you do. So all this is all interconnected, and you can control how you show up by taking care of yourself. So I ask, right? Small wins. I frequently get the blanks there. Oh, didn't really do anything. And then people know that I'm going to ask them about it. In fact, we sometimes even ask at the beginning. It's like, anybody wants to share good news of the day or yesterday? Anybody wants to share? It's a muscle. At the beginning, people are not very good. They're like, I don't have any good news. It's like, oh, you're here for one. That's good news, right? You're here. You showed up. You woke up. Amazing, right? So that's great. Secondly, getting into that mindset, you start to look for good news. It makes you a more positive person. But if you really struggle with your business just taking up like that sponge we talked about earlier all of your day, and it's just seeping everywhere, the phone, the calls, everything is just business, you will have to actually schedule wellness into your calendar. And I am that person that does that. I do it myself too. I schedule wellness. I have a block in the morning where I get up and stretch, and I have a block in the evening where I do a workout. And if I don't do that, it's not going to happen. So I need to schedule it. And
That's
you
right.
might be that person that says, I don't have time. And then I'm going to say, 5 minutes, 15 minutes? I call it, in fact, I have a trademark on it. I call it petite practice, petite French practice. You're going to take care of yourself in a small step. If you don't have 5 minutes, you have a serious problem in your life, honestly. I don't believe that at all. And if we can build it up to 15 minutes, I am going to be a happy camper. But we have to think a little bit about that. And I always say, You figure out what that is, morning, afternoon, evening, and then I will ask you about it. But you need to figure out when it is, what you want to do, and how you're going to be reporting back to me, because I'm going to hold you accountable on this. And I am actually always super happy to ask and how people then become comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I did the stretching thing, and actually, it did feel good, and it's awesome. So you need to think about it's just building momentum, as with anything in life, whether reading, whether you're doing a creative hobby, anything, it's going to build momentum, and the momentum actually will fuel your action in business.
Absolutely. And it's hard when it's being on the other end of it now. It doesn't seem hard for me. But when I first started, it was hard. And I did had to do exactly what you've endorsed, which is I'm going to make time. I'm going to make 1 hour. And it started out, I think it was 3 times a week. And then it went to 4 to 5 to 6. Then I got a little bit crazy with it. But nonetheless, I backed off a little. But nonetheless, making that discipline. And then the most remarkable thing happened as the weight started to come off. So did my level of anxiety. And then I really started to realize that, wow, this is the two are intertwined. I never realized it, but they are. That a lot of the weight gain was really anxiety. And as I was shedding weight, I was shedding anxiety and probably a lot of fear too. Because when you are a second gen, there's always a bit of a fear factor. It's, I don't want to be the generation that screws this up, you know, what my father started. And you see it show up in third and fourth and even fifth generation. All right, I don't want to be the one to crash the boat. So there's always an element of fear. However, you have to work through that and work through that anxiety. The idea of making fitness a discipline, do you sometimes see resistance to that in a business leader or a family business leader?
Yeah, and I love your example that you started to feel more in line with yourself and who you really are. I think sometimes it's nearly an armor that you have, and you feel you're just playing a role, you're just following a recipe, but it's not really you. You're not really aligned with yourself. And once you figure out something that you actually enjoy doing, and again, I keep wellness super broad, it could even be this laying outside, you know, in the grass and looking at the sky or closing your eyes. It does not even have to involve movement at all. My one rule is no electronics, but it could be listening to a book, that's all right. But no social media scrolling, that is not wellness. But once you figure that out and you realize how tremendously rejuvenating that is in lining up the true you with your values, with feeling better, showing up, and really showing your team, your family, the best version of yourself, the transformation is going to be absolutely tremendous. And I love how you brought this up that you started and then you went to a certain number of workouts per week and then you dialed it back. It has a lot to do with that. Working out or finding wellness is not a clear path. There's a lot of little steps you take and windy roads. There are days when you don't want to get up and do it. And then there are days when you feel maybe you should stay a little longer, or days when you feel like, oh my gosh, running is not my thing. And that's all good. It's all part of the process, right? It would be so easy if everybody would just do the same thing. But the great thing is that it's not that way. It's just for you to figure out what it is. And I always say fail stands for first attempt in learning. If you do some wellness and it's not for you, great. It was your first attempt in figuring that out. High five to you. I love it, right? But think about, again, the tombstone. You don't want to look back and say, gosh, I just wish I would have picked up running. Would have been cool to run with my son, daughter, uncle, blah, 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 or by myself. And there are actually businesses that take a run together or a walk together, walkie-talkies, they call it. And they just go out and they just do a business meeting on the go. It's another idea. You could just put your wellness into a leadership with regard to the whole business. Not that you have to, but there are so many cool ways that you can add wellness. It's tremendous.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's talk about another area where you've had a lot of focus and influence, and that's in working with and coaching female business leaders. What, if any, unique challenges do women face in leadership or even family-owned or multi-generational businesses where they're stepping into a leadership role, perhaps in an industry where it's maybe historically been more male-leaning or male-dominated, and here's this woman who's coming in into a leadership role and exerting influence on a population of people or an organization? Talk about that for a minute, if you would.
It's always coming down to one word, confidence.
Okay.
Confidence is a unique challenge, and figuring out not only stepping into a legacy, but also how to become a good leader. A lot of people think that they don't have the confidence to speak up. But when you really think about speaking up, that it's not always just sharing an opinion that others don't necessarily agree with. It's also your unique value, your ideas. And it's, of course, something that still connects you to the people that you are in the room. So you are a tremendous asset and value, and they want you there. And not just, I sometimes even say, you were there, but so was the chair. Why did you not speak up? You need to speak up, and you need to think that the confidence is already there. Your voice is already there. When you're thinking of something, it's already there. Quite honestly, the easiest step to get started for female leaders is just to ask questions. There might be a question that many people in the room had thought about, but they didn't ask. And quite honestly, I always think there's no such thing as a bad question, even if it's a question about repeating something. And I challenge people too. I say, just make it a game. Every meeting you have, ask one question. At least you said something, and you're going to become better at it. You don't want to sit in the room and just walk out and think, I had something I wanted to ask, but no. Every time, make it a game. Every time you're meeting, ask a question. And you're going to become better and better. It's just a muscle that you have to build, and you're going to realize that they really appreciate that. And again, there's probably at least one other person that thought the same thing, and they just didn't ask it, but you did. Yeah.
That's great advice. That's great. I want to talk about something recently you did. You gave a TEDx talk. Big deal, exciting. You're on the stage, big audience, important talk, big talk. So, talk about that experience and what was your message for your audience when you gave that talk? What were you talking about? What was your key message? And just share that experience, if you would, for a moment.
My talk was about how small steps create big impact. And I gave them a framework that you can create big impact in your life following the formula that I'm using myself in my business and my life, and how many of the successes I have accomplished, how I achieved them with that formula right there. I think that is really the starting point for a good talk or a good leader, that you think, what's the takeaway message here? What's in it for the audience? Why am I doing this? What am I contributing to them? Because they love me, and I'm sure they are there because they care about me. But at the end of the day, you want that they walk out and they think, that was a really good takeaway message. I could use this in my own life. That was how I set up my whole talk, that I immediately thought, all right, I want that they walk away having my, what I call a step framework to accomplish big things with small steps. And then I really lined it out very structured, and I was super animated on stage, and some people laughed, some people raised their hands, and it was really a great experience. I felt like home when I stood on the stage. So for you to think, all right, when a big talk comes up, you always need to think, why is the audience there? What's in it for them? And that means you tailor your talk to the audience, but at the same time, you need to look at your talk and you need to think, all right, what's really the takeaway message here? And I want to make them feel they actually value, I value that time. And they got some value out of my talk because I did value that time.
Awesome. Awesome. That's great. Bringing it back to family businesses and looking back at your career and the family businesses that you've worked with, what would you say are one or two of the most rewarding aspects of when you are working with a family-governed organization? What's most rewarding for you, Dr. Schroeder? What do you really love to get out of that experience? And what do you want them to get out of that experience?
It's sometimes changing somebody's mind on something where I feel I nudged them in a certain way, but I didn't really tell them to do it. And they ended up doing it. And then they come back and I'm like, you know what? Actually, that ended up working. It was cool. That kind of loop. And I know, as a mom too, we're never going to say, I told you, but where you just, that's really great. I love that. You
Yeah,
know,
that's
just let me
awesome.
know how things keep going. And it's unfortunate that people don't always dare to try new things. They're like stuck in a rut. And it's uncomfortable to try new things. But
Yeah.
sometimes the trying new things is, for me, the most rewarding process, really. When, again, becoming comfortable with maybe something uncomfortable because it's new, whether that's social media, creating YouTube shorts, being on TikTok, all these things out there, but we can't close our eyes to it. And at the same time, if there is somebody in your family that has some creative ideas about how to do it, don't shut them out. Maybe just listen to it. And
Nice.
then when that happens, the listen first, speak second, and they come back to me and they share it. It's just, I love it.
That's awesome.
Because I think that is really the generational difference. There's traditional marketing, but there is also the marketing, really, which is more like I'm pushing a product, but I'm also pulling information. And I think that sometimes the traditional marketing leaves out that pull aspect a little bit that we can get. So take advantage of different generations, the ideas that they have, and whether you create a whiteboard or you just have a brainstorming session, and then let that sink in, and then come back and see what you can actually do there. And that's one of my most rewarding aspects when people come back and they tell me, we did have that brainstorming session. It was actually cool what came up there. Yeah. Brené Brown calls it the rumble. And I like that. It's a little bit like there's some undercurrent of activity going in action,
Yeah.
and that might lead to some tremendously rewarding moments of activity.
Awesome. So let me ask you the flip side of that. What's been the most challenging aspect of working with the family governed enterprise?
I think that initially, unfortunately, and I mentioned this earlier, right? If you think about a circle, people are very much stuck in their way. And I hate to say it, you can't change people's thinking. You can calmly control yourself. If people want to believe in something, you can be the best Dale Carnegie in the world. It sometimes just doesn't work and you can change their mindset. I think that's tricky. And to me, the question that I always ask, is it worth fighting for this? Is it that important that you want to bring this up because that person's not going to change their mind? Or is it something you just need to accept? Think about this, the 80 and the 20 rule. Is it so big that it's part of the 80% where you are like, oh my gosh, it just drives me crazy? Or is it more like on the 20%, you're like, you know what? People have their things, they have their moments, it's all right. But at the end of the day, they will only change their behavior if you stop the nagging, the reminding, and all this, because eventually they're going to realize you're not nagging anymore. And maybe that just might be the trigger moment. What also helps is that you actually start doing it yourself, because becoming an example of something and that might be successful already might change people's mind. So the most frustrating thing is that sometimes, again, it's emotional, right? That emotions are there and they have been there for a long time. It's always been done this way. and you don't quite agree with it. And I totally get this, but at the same time, you just have to take a step back and think, how important is this for me to change it? Because it might just not be. It might be bigger in your head than what you actually assume. And there are maybe like that list of what do I love, what is maybe tricky for me. That list of what do I love might be much longer. So there are some things you just have to accept. People are people, right?
Yeah. And you brought up an interesting point, and I think it shows up a lot in the family governed business where sometimes they're a little bit, I don't want to say isolated, but maybe a little bit isolated from the outside world and certain real niche industries and whatnot. And you often hear, why are you doing this? We've always done it this way. I heard that so many times when I joined this business. And I was asked, why? We've always done it this way. And after a while, I'm like, that's not really a good answer, is it? Especially when I'm looking at, okay, we've always done it this way, and we always seem to lose money by doing it this way. So maybe that way is not a good way, even though it's always been done that way. Maybe we should try something new, and maybe we need a better answer than, well, it's just the way we've always done it. And I'm not saying that sometimes that is the right way, but I don't know if that's always a great answer to that question. And it's one that maybe needs to be challenged sometimes. So I'm sure you probably run into that a number of times.
It happens with everything in life. And it's, again, it's that comfort loop. You're just doing it because you know how to do it. It's not the best way, but it's the way that you are comfortable with. And then the question becomes, why not taking another way? Because I don't know it. It's, do you always take the same road when you drive to work? You know how boring that becomes? Have you ever taken a different path when you drive to work and all of a sudden explored? There is some really cool neighborhoods out there. There's this cute coffee shop at the corner. You know how your mind actually builds connections when you explore something new? That's the same thing for your business right there. Trying something new doesn't have to mean that you don't arrive at your business just because you take a different route. It just means that maybe you just branched out of the comfort just a little bit, and maybe next year just a little bit more. And of course, there are easy ways to do that, but it sometimes starts with just listening and figuring out where are we collectively here. And let's maybe just put ideas there and then see how they all line up with the bigger mission and the bigger goal of that business.
Excellent. Wow. So, last question, and you've given so many great takeaways today. But if somebody, one of our listeners, wanted to hear more, they wanted to connect with you, learn about your coaching practice, tune into one of your podcasts, check out one of your books, what's the best way for our listeners to connect with you?
Go to my website, drchristiana.com. There you can grab my books and also behind me. I'm actually working on a new book that's called Step Into Your Voice, helping leaders with confidence, with becoming better communicators. And I'm also going to share my whole journey to the TEDx in another book that's called The Runway to the Red Dot. So if TEDx has been on your mind as a goal in your sometime journey, the tombstone TEDx speaker, I don't know, then that will be coming out too. And of course, the podcast is available where all podcasts are. Happy, Healthy Hustle. Check it out. I have some amazing insights I'm sharing there. And of course, other business leaders, small, large scale, family run, are sharing their best tips and tricks there too.
Awesome. Dr. Schroeder, thank you so much for joining me on Growing Up B2B. Your work highlights how health, mindset, and communication are just as critical for family business success as is strategy, finance, and the other aspects of the family enterprise. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Christiana Schroeder, business coach, professor, speaker, and host of Happy Healthy Hustle podcast. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Dr. Schroeder, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DaliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Dalia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.